Thank you, Brother Scott, for those very interesting remarks. We'll now open the class for anyone who has anything to add. Brother Bro?
I'd like to again point out a little bit of the difference between Nehemiah and Ezra. You know, as people, we tend to want to put people into categories or boxes and fit them into our mold of what they should be like, and condemn one for not doing it the way you think is right. And when we look at Ezra, and he finds this same situation that Nehemiah did, where the elders are taking advantage of the poor. When told this sin, Ezra rent his clothes and wept. And yet from the seventh verse of Nehemiah, we find out, I consulted with myself and I rebuked the nobles. He got angry, and the rulers, and said unto them, ye exact usury from his brother, and I set a great assembly against him. Well, that's a entirely different reaction than renting your clothes and weeping. But again, we don't see the scriptures condemning either one. They're both in the Bible. They're both upheld as men of God. And it comes down to a great lesson for us that we have to respect the brethren and sisters and their approach to resolving a problem. It's going to be different than what we think they should do. It's going to happen because people are different, and that's just the way it is, and that's the way God created us. The angels have different approaches to things. We have different approaches to things, and we have to understand that and relate to that. Ezra and Nehemiah are both in the scriptures as great men and uncondemned in their actions. And like we sing a hymn, and I'm sure I've done it often enough that I've just mouthed the words and didn't think about what I was saying. But you know that if you think about what the words are saying, and you put that together with Ezra and Nehemiah being different, you know, we say, let us each esteem his brother better than himself to be. You know, that's an important concept, because we don't always agree with the way somebody does something, and we need to think about why they did it and how they did it. They have a different viewpoint toward each other. Let us each prefer another, full of love and envy free. We sing that hymn all the time, but do the words actually mean anything to us?
Brother Phil, and then Brother Dave.
I would like to add my thanks too to the words of Brother Scott as he's developed the further burden that Nehemiah had. It's really impressive as we go through these early chapters of Nehemiah, just what Nehemiah had to contend with. And I think probably we could trace the sort of the type of Christ in Nehemiah, who was also a burden bearer. And thinking about the words that Brother Scott has drawn our attention to in this chapter, the exploitation of the Jews, that one against another, their brethren, some who were in more unfortunate situations than another. It is so typical of human nature. Whatever sort of Brother Scott mentioned, the great political systems of socialism and capitalism, the extremes of both sort of like really kiss, they meet together. Human nature is so bent on exploiting anything it can for its own advantage. And that's in us all. We have to see that in to greater and larger degrees. It's the work of the flesh, which must be destroyed in us as individuals. I was just thinking when Brother Scott was speaking, what would be the parallel today? And I'm not quite sure how we could be in a situation of exploiting our brethren and sisters. Perhaps others may have some thoughts on that, but certainly the evil that had taken place here must have been extremely distressing to Nehemiah. Here he was, you know, in the midst of enemies, and the work of the truth is being undermined by those who should be fighting forward and on the same page. And I think probably we find that in our own individual circumstances. Sometimes perhaps we can put up with the contempt that we find in the world. We can put up with the ridicule, perhaps, and we expect it. It's not going to be necessarily strange. But the real thing that can perhaps undermine is when we get ecclesia or inter-ecclesial problems and troubles. That really saps the energy from an individual when the problems come from within. I can't remember. I think it might have been Brother Matthew in his remarks this morning might have said, "United we stand, divided we fall." You know, the whole work of the truth here in Nehemiah was calculated to collapse if something wasn't done. These were the very workers that were responsible for getting that wall completed. And so I think Brother Scott is sort of like, from a different angle again now, shown just how important it is for us to bear one another's burdens and not seek our own, but to remember the needs of one another. And that's sometimes difficult because as human nature, we usually think of number one. We were almost pre-programmed to do that. The commandments of Christ run, as Brother Robert says, counter to human nature, and we've got to do that. The other point I would just like to make before sitting down is the Brother Justin, I don't know whether he's here at the moment or where he's popped out. Yeah, he is. Brother Justin continues to sort of like test our grey matter, and he asked a question this morning. I don't think it got answered in the discussion that followed, but I know Brother Justin and myself and Brother Lee Freeberg and Brother Dan were discussing this afterwards. And I'm just wondering, in Brother Scott's remarks here, that there was an answer to, or not so much an answer, but a development of the question that Brother Justin put this morning. If you remember, Brother Justin made reference to chapter 4, verse 21, where he says, Nehemiah's request, "Let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem in the night, that they may be a guard to us and labor in the day." So Nehemiah was asking individuals with their servants to come within the walls of Jerusalem. Now, you know, it might seem as if, well, wouldn't you want to go inside the walls of Jerusalem? Isn't that a safer place to be anyway? Well, it would appear that when they came back, although there would have been a natural antipathy between the Jews and what were really Samaritans in that area, even though they would not really gel together, they really could get on okay outside the walls of Jerusalem. There wasn't the fear of being attacked without. And that's very much like with the world. When you're on their kind of terms, that's okay. But if you engage in a building work like Nehemiah was going to do, then that's different. There would be opposition. And Jerusalem needed to be rebuilt. When you built that walls of Jerusalem, you had established an economy, a kingdom, in a sense, not the kingdom of Israel, we know that, but you really got a power base. And the opposition did not want that to happen. But being outside of the walls of Jerusalem, that wasn't exactly a problem. And we notice in later on in Nehemiah, they are to even have to cast lots for one in ten to dwell within the walls of Jerusalem. So there was a desire to be outside the walls of Jerusalem, probably because you could have fields. You couldn't have a field inside the wall of Jerusalem, but you could have fields outside the walls of Jerusalem. You could establish setting up crops and vineyards and all sorts of things, and you could start trading. So it would seem, as a suggestion and in somewhat an answer to Brother Justin's remarks, that Brother Scott has really given us another insight here. Here was brethren and sisters, if you like, responding to Nehemiah's call to come inside the walls of Jerusalem, and as a result, were impoverishing themselves for the work of the truth. And then on top of that, being exploited by the brethren and sisters who happened to be in a better financial position than themselves. So I think really we can see that, you know, sometimes when you accept the truth, things don't always go well. Things sometimes go, you know, you think when you accept the truth, everything's going to be hunky-dory. And we find sometimes it's the opposite. And, you know, the exhortation is to stand fast. Let us arise and build. So I think some of these things are really exhortational for us all to consider in this book.
Brother Dave Somerville.
I think our brother did a great job about bringing out verse 6 and verse 7, how he was very angry when he heard that the Israelites were taking advantage of their own brethren. And it shows that, you know, Scott brought out how he obviously took time to think about what he was going to say before he said it. And we think about how many times when we get very angry and we say what we want to say, afterwards, when we start to think about it, it might not have been really what we wanted to say or it done in the best way. But also the rulers that they were talking to, they didn't talk back. It's never easy taking correction, even when you're wrong. And we see here that he, by going about it and doing it the right way, the other nobles corrected what they had done wrong. And that's, even though we might know that we're wrong, when we get called on it, a lot of times we get our back against the wall and stand up against it. So just to show the other side of the coin too, it's easy to say, and Nehemiah did a great job, and he went on to show that he didn't take money from them, even though he was deserving of his position. He didn't take any money from them, and any of the servants that he brought, he was paying for. So the importance of leading by example. But sometimes brothers and sisters make mistakes and point out that to us when we make the same mistakes. And it could be easy for us to say, who are you to tell me when you did the same thing I did? Well, they might be the best ones to tell us because they've gone through that trial and are trying to keep us from making that same mistake that they made.
Brother Glendon, next.
Just kind of had a question and maybe a suggestion on verse 7 there. Then I consulted with myself. Perhaps someone can help me out that has a little better access to the original Hebrew. But you know, what I have is simply two words there for I consulted with myself. One means to ascend the throne or to rule. The other is the heart. So it seems like perhaps we're not getting the full implication of what's being said there. You know, I can see that being translated, then I gained rule of my heart and spoke. Or it could mean then I gave my heart rule and spoke. Just wonder if somebody could maybe clarify the full meaning of that phrase for us.
Someone who has a good knowledge of the original. Yeah. Hey, Brother Ewan.
Yeah, so that phrase in Hebrew, he consulted with himself, it is, as you said, to rule over his heart. It's as if he just sat there and pondered for a while and, you know, understood what he had to say. In other words, he didn't rush into it. He didn't with, you know, anger or with anything like that. He just carefully thought and got control of his heart and his emotions. And then he spoke to the nobles and so on.
In the back of my mind, I think Brother Grocott commented a little on that and said something to the effect that he was wise not to act on his anger and give it some time to settle before he did something. Kind of like the recommendation, if you're writing a letter, leave it on a shelf for a little while before you stick it in the envelope. Any other comments? Brother Dave, sorry.
Brethren and sisters, we know it's written that anger resteth in the bosom of fools, and that when we're angry, we are most vulnerable and apt to sin, because we react upon our emotions merely. But in his consulting with himself, in his seeking in his heart what would be right, what should be done, he doubtless considered the law. Nehemiah would know the law. And so he would consult and think, what is to be done? What do I do in this situation? And though he had been angry, his anger was calmed. And there may be a consideration, maybe passion is not necessarily always anger, but his anger was tempered, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord by thought and by reflection. And that's what we must do. There's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. You know, the heart of man is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? There's a multitude, a raft of scriptures that come to mind. But Nehemiah, being the man that he was, would consider well what had to be done. He knew that it was wrong and evil for them to be putting their brethren into bondage and to have seized upon their lands and even their crops. So he weighed out what was written and then acted upon it. God blessed the reaction of the noble, blessed Nehemiah, blessed the people, really, in the nobles rendering up an agreeable answer. They agreed to release from bondage their Israelitish brethren and those who they had already enslaved, and to return the land, realizing the land was Yahweh's. Yahweh had given it in the first place. They were provisional occupants or tenants thereon. And so therefore they, and as we might say today, they didn't have a leg to stand on. But it shows us, it's a lesson that shows us that it is so easy for us to breach. The tongue is a very little member among our members. It's a world of iniquity, set on fire of, the word is hell there in the King James, I think. But the idea is for us to bring our bodies into subjection to God. Paul spoke of it in a little bit different light, saying he kept under his body, lest at any time when he preached to others, he himself would become a castaway. But Nehemiah, though first angered, tempered that anger with righteous judgment based upon what was written and commanded. And that's what we must learn to do.
Brother Ewart?
Just going back to that previous point about Nehemiah ruling over his heart, it's very similar to that verse in Proverbs 16, verse 32, where it says, "He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit better than he that taketh the city." So Nehemiah, it's ruling over his heart, but it's the same phrase as in Proverbs, ruling over his spirit. So in Proverbs it's saying that rather than just, even if you're really strong and mighty, just rushing into an action is never as good as someone who conquers their emotions and conquers the mind of the flesh and enters into an action fully knowing what to do. So the phrase ruling over your spirit in Proverbs is very similar to the phrase ruling over, you know, Nehemiah ruling over his heart.
Brother Lenny?
Following up a little bit what Brother David Somerville mentioned about leading by example. You know, at the beginning of the chapter, you know, he talks, you know, he finds out what's wrong and so on, and then he goes on and he ponders and he comes up with a plan. Now we know that Nehemiah, as commented yesterday, was a man of action, and he had to action was required in many areas, and this was one of them. And we look at the verses at the end. Unless I'm reading this wrong, but it says, "Moreover, there were at my table 150 of the Jews," and so on. And then the next verse talks about, I guess, the provisions that were provided for the meals. So, leading by example is the key that Brother David mentioned. And so what I think what I'm saying here is he's provided the meals at his own cost, it seems to me. And, of course, this was another way of leading by example, that he's showing them all. And as we mentioned before, it's not ours, it's Yahweh's. So then the exhortation in that, you think about, we should never underestimate our ability to lead, even though we're not really leading per se. A little act, you know, we have to ourselves. We can, I mean, I'll pick some trivial things like picking up a piece of paper or a piece of trash around, you know, we always hear the brethren talking about, you know, keeping things clean. But how many times do we walk by and we don't pick it up? So why would the younger people pick it up if we don't pick it up? And that's just a trivial example. But when we get down to things like, you know, spiritual, you know, we do things. We never really know how we are impacting the person next to us, how we are impacting the young ones among us. And as I read about that, Nehemiah is just a great example here, again, of unselfishness and bearing cost to himself for the benefit of his brethren and his sisters.
Brother Johnny.
Brothers and sisters, in this 13th verse, we have a strange thing that he seems to do, where he says, "I shook my lap." We saw with the girdle that we read earlier was buried, and then he goes and digs it up, that God uses examples to teach us things, and here Nehemiah is using an example to teach these priests and the people. The people have been taking financial advantage of their brethren, and in ways, as has been discussed, that was completely illegal for one thing under the law, let alone reasonable, and that they're all sort of in the same boat. They're surrounded by enemies. They should have been seeing the benefit of working together instead of taking advantage. And so he brings them together and explains it to them and reasons with them, and they, at least at that time, capitulated. And they say, "We will restore them. We will require it." And so they say they will. And he says, "And I made them take an oath, make them promise that they would, on top of saying that they would." And then he says, "And I shook my lap. So God shake out every man from his house and his labor that performeth not this promise, even thus be he shaken out and emptied." And then they say, "Amen" to that. Well, it's a great lesson for us that we, either in our hearts or some silently, some more verbally, say amen at the giving of someone else giving a prayer. We better listen very intently to what being said, because sometimes we can't say amen, because we better make sure that what is being requested is in accordance like this with God's requirements. And in this case, not only were they saying amen to it, but what they were saying in agreement to was that they be shaken out and empty. So the very thing they were trying to do in taking advantage of others, they put what may be considered a curse upon themselves, that they would be the ones with nothing.
Last comment, Brother David Van Pelt.
It's a question, really, and in light of what John was just saying, doesn't the word amen mean so be it? In other words, we're assenting to the prayer when we say amen. And these, in Nehemiah's day, were assenting to what they had agreed to and said they would do. So we better be careful what we're doing. You know, we should realize the seriousness of prayer. Never approach God lightly or half-listening or half-hearted. It's a very serious thing for us to approach the living God, the creator and sustainer of heaven and earth and all that in them are.
I think we'll have to discuss the answer to that in the interlude. Time to close.